Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Hello, and welcome again to our program. As we approach year-end and the beginning of next year, it's a good time to begin mapping out the next stage of life. Everyone does that around the first of the year anyway, although they usually break the resolution shortly after they make them. And what better place to start than looking at the rest of your career? If you have a full-time job, you're going to spend about 2,000 hours next year, or almost a third of your waking hours on the job. And that assumes only a 40-hour work week with no overtime and a full two-week vacation, and that's unfortunately fantasy for a lot of us in these hectic days. At mid-career or beyond, are you having a good time while you're earning a living? You know, it's not just about hours on the job. From my personal experience, I've had some really crummy jobs in the past that I didn't like, and stressful or unfulfilling work spills over the whole rest of your life. It spoils your home life, can spoil your relaxation, your relationship with your spouse and kids. A frequently recurring theme of our program, and both in recent weeks and before, and in my book, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, is taking control and mapping out your career. After all, you've got to be CEO of you. Why? Well, in this modern age of free agency, the average adult today has 7 different employers over their career. I think I read that somewhere recently. And no one cares as much about your career progression and you as you do yourself. You don't want to leave your future totally in your boss's hands, do you? Even if you're happy with your present job, it's always best to have a backup plan in mind. And I can sure speak from personal experience, because I had worked up to a job I loved as CFO of a West Coast insurance company back in the late 80s, and then the company got taken over, and about a year later I was out on the street, and I did a frantic job search, 2 failed ventures, finally did an entrepreneurial foundation of a small insurance brokerage and slaved at that for a number of years, didn't really enjoy that. And you know, if I'd taken time out to figure out what I really wanted to do, I might have been doing this kind of thing, midlife motivation coach, 10 or 15 years sooner. How about you? Have you considered yourself as the possibility of maybe being an entrepreneur instead of just long, hard hours working for someone else? Remember, it's not just about career. It's about enjoyment of being alive now, along with a solid path toward retirement and a purposeful and bountiful later years of your life. Wouldn't it be great also if you could afford those amenities you really want, but not just to impress the neighbors down the street? What if you could banish the words, "I can't afford to," forever from your lexicon? We're extremely grateful to have our guest today because she's going to talk about your very own personalized Plan B. She's here to help you get what you want and to enjoy life along the way while you're doing it. Who knows, your Plan B just might become your Plan A. Kathleen Rich New is author of a brand new book that's coming out in January, You Always Need a Plan B, The Real Deal Guide to Jumpstarting Your Next Career. And she has 25 years of human resources experience for a few companies, including one you may have heard of called Apple Computer. She's a trainer, speaker, and executive coach, and owner and principal of Clarity Works, which is a human resources consulting firm. Kathleen, I wish I had known you when I was up the creek without a paddle back in 1989, but you're here today, and we're glad to greet you. Hello and welcome.
Well, thank you so much, Roy. I am delighted, and certainly your program is hitting a hot spot when we talk about middle age can be your best age, because as you know, we're all living longer, healthier, more vibrantly, and so you are helping to help us understand that being over 40 can really be a fantastic adventure.
It sure can. Well, let's start from the beginning. What motivated you to write your book about Plan B? It sounds like an intriguing subject, but what motivated you to do that?
Very simply, I had done everything that they told me to do, get a good education, get a good job, work hard, and then I found myself burned out. Hmm. And so I literally leaped out of corporate America, very secure, very high-paying job, to say, what's next? And I had no clue what to do. I was an expert in what I did. I knew how to fix problems in human resources. But when it came to really creating a company, getting those first customers, pricing it, it was a journey that I had no idea would take so long. Hmm. And the intent of the book is really to help those that are basically have also done the right thing, and either they're deciding to leave their job because of choice or because they're forced out.
Yeah.
I've got 3 degrees, and they're all in business, and what's in this book I didn't get from any of those degree programs. And so I put it together to really be the how-to guide for your boomers to read before they decide to either become an independent professional or to create a business.
Yeah, that's certainly a good idea. In a few words, what is Plan B? I know you can't describe the whole book in a
right.
half-hour program, but just in summary, what is Plan B?
Well, so let me do 2 definitions. Let me define first Plan A and then Plan B for contrast.
Yeah, we might as well start with A.
Absolutely. So A is working in a job for a company. You have a boss. And if you lose it, hopefully you can find another company at the same salary and benefits or even better.
Yeah.
Now, as you know, the reality of that is not as strong as it was today. And the myth of a Plan A and hanging desperately onto to Plan A is that you're going to work 20, 30, maybe 40 years for the same company.
Yeah.
And then you're going to retire.
It
doesn't happen. And then you're going to retire and you're going to get lifelong pension and benefits.
Yeah, that
well,
doesn't
guess
happen
what?
Too often either anymore.
Well, absolutely. Your company goes into bankruptcy, and depending on the judge, they can walk away from everything that they have promised you.
Yeah.
So that's Plan A. Plan B are the other ways that you can create a living. And a Plan B, bottom line, must be able to solve a problem that exists, create a new market, or bring pleasure to the folks that are going to buy your products or services.
Yeah, very definitely. What is a good Plan B for someone in their 40s, 50s, or 60s? And what I'm trying to get at here is, how do you take all the work experience and the other things that you've built up over the years and yet get out of the box of just thinking about doing your skills in a specific way for a specific employer the way you've always done it? How do you take those skills and yet apply them to a totally new type situation?
That is a great question, and one that many people are wondering. The way I've structured it is that several things need to take place before. So let's pretend someone is in a job and they're just bored or fed up and they want to do something else, which is where I was. The first thing they need to do is really think about the resources that they have.
Yeah.
So do I have the time? And if I'm working full-time, as you've asked other guests, is then where in my life am I going to spend the time to work on this part-time?
Because you also have family responsibilities, or, you know, most people do, and social responsibilities, once in a while you might want to just sit back and have a good time.
Exactly. And what's important is that if you want to start a Plan B, it cannot be a sometime business, which means when I get around to it, which means it'll never happen.
Yeah, there's so many of those. When I get my next this or that, then I'm going to start my own business, or I'm going to do this or that.
Absolutely. So first of all, you need to figure out where the time's going to come from, and then you need to know where the money's coming from.
Yeah, that's sort of a key ingredient.
Absolutely. In fact, the statistics are pretty consistent, which is after 3 years, 80% of new businesses fail. Number one reason, they ran out of money.
Yeah.
So you have to be willing to support your business and your personal business expenses. And my recommendation is 3 years. But let's say someone has expertise and they can work from a home office. They may be up and running in 8 months.
Yeah, a lot of it depends on the type of business you're contemplating and
absolutely
how much overhead there is and how many staff you'd have to have and all those kind of things.
Right, and the third part of the structure is what is the work lifestyle that's going to match you? And by that, I mean, what is the type of work that you're going to be doing? Is it behind a computer? Is it outside landscaping? So, you know, what is the type? And then also, who are the people you're going to be working with, meaning who are the customers?
Yeah.
And then the employees that you will eventually need.
And it's so important to think about your own personal skills and yet the skills that you're not good at that you will need in that business. And then you've got to recruit partners and so, or employees or, you know, however you want to structure it, and then you have to figure out how you're going to compensate them, whether you're going to cut them in on the deal or, you know, pay them a salary if you can afford to do that. There's so many issues there that you need to consider.
Right. And what I have discovered in the 3 years that I took researching this book is that if you go into Small Business Administration offices, SBA, who offer fantastic resources, the first thing they want to do is get you into marketing plan. But the problem is you have not created your vision that's clear enough. In fact,
that's
one of my
correct.
Chapters is called, Is Your Why Bigger Than Your Butt?
Yeah, I saw that, and that's very true. And that's, you know, one of the related questions I had is, how do you decide if you really have the entrepreneurial desires and skills within you, because it's so different from, and I can speak from personal experience working for a boss, no matter how high up in the company you are, you still basically are operating on somebody else's direction or guidance, and suddenly you're not.
Absolutely. In fact, talk about eliminating discrimination is that you succeed or fail on your own. But that is a good question. How will I know that I will succeed? You don't. However,
that's where you need to find out whether your whys are bigger than your butts.
Exactly. Because that has to be such a strong, burning vision that literally no matter what comes up, you just keep going.
Yeah.
Also, the ability to take risk, which means I'm willing to be uncomfortable with not exactly knowing how this is going to go.
Yeah, and not exactly knowing what the stream of income coming in is going to be for, like you say, 3 years or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And then kind of the fourth piece is they need to have the focus, the discipline, and the follow-through.
Yeah.
So if
and
it's,
one additional thing you have to have is full agreement with your spouse and family if you're married, that, you know, they're going to probably have to sacrifice and give up some things, and it's not going to be life like it was while you're spending long hours starting up this business.
Sounds like you had some experience there.
I do. Not all good.
You're absolutely
right. Because I didn't have a plan B.
Well, you just kind of jumped in.
Yeah. You know,
right.
Suddenly you're sitting there 1 week considering how you're going to get your company through some difficult financial times and this takeover and all these other things. A few days later, you're out on the street thinking about what am I going to do next.
Exactly. And you know, and kind of the fifth part of, will I know if I succeed, is that you have to be able to make the sales.
Yeah.
And that is really what trips a lot of really bright, talented people up, is they say, I'm going to hire it out. Well, in the beginning, you can't.
Yeah, no, so many people fail to realize that they say, I'm not a salesperson, I'm not in marketing, I don't do that. And yet you've got to be a super salesman of yourself and your concepts and ideas, or you're not going to get anywhere on it.
Oh, you're absolutely right, because you have to be able to get, you have to be able to get to either solve the pain or to bring pleasure, but you have to be able to articulate it in a way that you have people leaning forward to learn more.
Yeah, very definitely. I knew a guy, you know, several years back when I was struggling around kind of as a consultant, and they had a great product. It was some kind of water treatment. I don't even remember exactly what it was, but I arranged for some like small business investors or people that arranged financing to travel down to Kansas City to meet these people. They came all the way from Michigan. And I got down there, and the guy just had no concept at all of selling his business. They were so wrapped up in themselves and the way they were doing things that they didn't really leave any reason why an investor would want to invest in them. And it was such a shame. I don't know what happened to that company. Maybe they got financing and are thriving today. I don't know. But I know my investor, potential investors, and I walked away shaking our heads because they just didn't have their act together.
And that's it. And by the way, Roy, you can learn sales. I mean,
yeah.
I came out of human resources, for crying out loud, in corporate America. My job was to, like, fix things and help people. But you know what? I learned how to make sales.
Yeah.
So if you can learn, you can learn how to make sales.
Yeah, that's true. You had mentioned in your book there are 6 key ingredients to a successful business, and I think you may have touched on some of them, but could you go over at least a few of those again so that...
Absolutely. In fact, let me talk about perhaps the top 3.
Okay.
First of all, your market trends have to be growing.
Yeah.
Now, examples of growing market trends for the next several decades continue to be pets, weight loss, anti-aging.
Yeah. Those anti-aging is certainly popular as the baby boomers get older and older.
And that is too big of a market to ignore.
Yeah.
So anti-aging is huge. The second... One of the second ingredients is you need to have a consumable product or service.
Yeah, that's very true.
You know, the faster they use it up, the better it is. And the third one is that there needs to be enough compensation or margins for this to make sense for you.
Yeah.
Because you're not going into business to become bankrupt. And it's interesting, as I'm talking with some of my clients and we get to the money part, their energy just goes wacko because they're having a hard time really being clear about what kind of money they want to bring into their organization and to create the lifestyle they want.
Yeah, that is so foolish because if you don't have specific monetary goals in mind, you're just going to probably thrash around and not get too far.
You're probably going to close the doors.
Yeah. No, I knew this was a crazy deal. This business was basically, it was a fairly new startup business, and the woman that ran it was selling the service to transport elderly people around to various locations. It was kind of like a transportation service. But the problem with her business is she had it organized so these people paid a one-time fee and thereby receive these services throughout the rest of their lives. And obviously it made absolutely no sense because the only way you could sustain this is to continue signing up new people. And pretty soon, obviously, when the business quit growing, the business revenues would dry up and the business would go under. And it did, unfortunately.
Well, and that's because she didn't have a way to think through what she's really putting into place. And again, the book is designed to really help you think through. So it's almost like a soft business plan. That SBA will put you in a business plan, and it's hard, and you have to come up with numbers. But I have something called the Real Deal Checklist that takes you through 6 different areas that you think about, you know, exactly what are you going to create to sell?
Yeah.
Who are your buyers? How are you going to market and sell to them?
Yeah.
And importantly, where are you in this picture? What is
why is what you're doing different from what somebody else can duplicate?
Absolutely, because you have to be able to, in fact, under the Watt section, you have to be able to withstand the competition of the marketplace.
Yeah.
So, for example, Quiznos, a franchise,
yeah.
Which is one of the 4 Plan B options that I detail information on, had a leading edge because they had toasted sandwiches.
Yeah,
well,
I love them.
All it took was Subway to put in ovens, and now Quizno has lost their edge.
Yeah, that's exactly my personal case with my wife and I. We used to love Quiznos because they were pretty distinct and different, but now Subway tastes about the same.
Exactly.
So we literally go there now. And that's not a pitch, by the way, for Subway. I don't have anything against Quiznos. It's just not that unique anymore.
Right, and so that's where they couldn't withstand the competition in the marketplace.
Yeah.
Because it was easily duplicatable, and certainly another one of the key ingredients is unique products or exclusive technology. So
yeah.
Unique product for Quiznos for a little bit was toasted sandwich, but then that went away.
Yeah.
Well, and look at iPhone and iTunes and iPads,
yeah.
Both products and technology. I mean, they've got a corner on it.
Yeah, I wonder how long, you know, there's just been articles recently that Microsoft may be catching up on some of those things. And, of course, Google and other people are going after some of that. So that's interesting, beyond the scope of this program, obviously.
Absolutely. But part of it is you need to be watching the trends. And that's where, you know, when we talk about the six key ingredients, really pay attention to trends. Because
yeah.
I am positive Apple is looking at exactly what you just talked about the other folks coming after their market.
Yeah.
But another one of the key ingredients is perfect timing. Apple
yeah.
was first to the market.
Yeah, Steve Jobs was perfect with the original personal computer. And then everyone thought Apple was kind of out of the game, and then he came up with all these tablets and iPhones, smartphones, and other things. His timing has been really great.
Yeah, and so the more you can lock down to the six key ingredients, because it's really kind of looking at what is it that the most successful companies have, and all of them don't have all six ingredients, but the more ingredients you have, the better off you are.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, here's kind of a curveball, and maybe it's outside the scope of your book, but say that I work for a company that I really enjoy, and I'm strongly in accordance with their objectives and what they've accomplished over the years, but I've hit like a dead end in my career. They tell me there's probably not going to be any further promotions in my future, or I see a roadblock there. Is it possible to have like a plan B within your present employer, or is plan B strictly, you know, going out on your own and doing something? I mean, is it possible to develop some new idea that you could present to your present employer, and how would you even go about doing that, and how could you sell that to your boss?
Boy, that is a great question, because I've had the unique opportunity of being in multiple corporate environments and kind of seeing how the organization goes. First of it is, if you want to stay within the company and create a plan B within the company, that means that you're creating a new division or you're launching a new product.
Yeah.
Are you in the in the department that would do that, such as business development or research and development? So are you in the right spot?
Yeah, and there's so many organizational hurdles because you're likely to step on somebody else's toes.
Right, and depending on how big, you know, depending on the corporate culture,
yeah,
you know, do they embrace that or do they discourage it?
Yeah, I know. I think it was Whirlpool a few years ago set up a special incentive program for people coming in with new ideas, as I recall now. I don't recall the details of it, but I know some companies have done that.
In that case, the culture, the leadership is saying, we value your ideas.
Yeah.
And by the way, doing it inside a corporation from just a whole everything that you have to learn when you create your own business is much easier only if the culture supports you. But at the end of the day, as we know, is the promised pension plans and benefits are going away. So what's more important? Is it being able to create an independent revenue stream that in case, you know, my organization gets bought out and then they lay off all the employees and sell off the assets?
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, for someone who is in a good situation, I would encourage them to obviously explore internally what would that look like and how the company would reward you. And then if that doesn't look promising, then, again, on a part-time basis,
yeah.
not a sometime basis, a part-time basis, is what is it that you would like to do? And again, kind of the book takes you through the whole structure about really thinking through it. But in addition to that, is they have to make sure that there is not an issue with the company that they're creating a product
yeah,
that would compete
great,
with
definitely.
The company.
No, I think, and you bring it out in your book, and I bring it out in a chapter in my book. It's so important that you take the time away from the stress of your current organization to really think about what you want to do through the rest of your life, what you would like to be doing to have someone pay you to have a good time, be it a boss or customers or, you know, heck, investment return, whatever. But somebody's going to pay you to do what you really want to do in life. And then you need to start visualizing and thinking like an incumbent in that position and see if that's really what you want to be doing.
Oh, day in, day out, because you're potentially going to be with your plan B for the next 5, 10, or more years.
Yeah, and it's and you also have to be ready to give up at least temporarily some of these, and maybe this hopefully isn't important to a lot of people, but some people it is, you know, your status as VP of such and such for such and such corporation, that corner office and that company lease car and, you know, the membership and the country club and all these things that, you know, may have gone, and maybe that's silly because I don't know how many people are considering Plan B are actually in those kind of positions where they're giving them up. But there is a, you know, you may not have the same social relationships you do with some of your best friends from work and other things. So there's so many considerations before you actually take the plunge.
Which is the reason you need your why.
Yeah, that's for sure.
That's where you start.
You had discussed, I know in your book you have chapters on this of starting your own business from scratch, buying an existing business, buying a franchise, or network marketing. And, of course, there's multi-level marketing and other varieties of that. And what are briefly just some of the advantages and disadvantages of some of these various type options that you have?
Okay, great question. So obviously if you're starting a business, it's a very high time, money investment.
Yeah.
And obviously there's also a high failure rate.
Yeah.
The advantage is when we look at the wealthy 1%, which is defined for my purpose of earning over $250,000 a year, 74% of those wealthiest are business owners.
Huh.
So if, in fact, you have the resources, the discipline, and you know, basically the products or services, then that can put you in a significant financial advantage. And at the end, you can sell the company
and
cash out. Buying an existing business is the products, the services, the customers, and the processes are already in place. So you come in and shadow the owner to learn what you can, and obviously making sure that those relationships with customers and clients are very strong so that what happens, kind of new management eases out, and then you become the new face.
But you also ought to have some ideas of what you might be able to do a little better to build on that business.
Exactly. And the statistics on that from one of the experts I interviewed said that an existing business with $100,000 in sales statistically will still be open 5 years later.
Hmm. Well, that's an advantage, obviously.
Right. So the money is still high, the risk is still high, the time is still high, but it's lower than starting a business because you have everything in place.
Yeah. How about buying a franchise?
Buying a franchise, which I call a business in a box, is once upon a time a small business that has duplicated its operations, its marketing and sales, and its administration that have been duplicated more than once. So what you do is that you buy the concept, and by the way, when you buy a franchise, then you're buying the trademark and the systems. So let's say it's a fast food restaurant because those are the largest number of franchises that exist. You still have to then have the building, the signage, the inventory, the employees, the uniforms. So whatever the franchise fee is, the reality is significantly bigger than that.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And by the way, there's good franchises and there's bad franchises.
There's been a lot of lawsuits over franchises in recent years of those that went bad.
Right, and franchises fail at the same rate as new businesses.
Huh,
so, and in fact, I talk about one wine owner who had a franchise business didn't know that his franchise had gone out of business until one of the employees from the headquarters applied for a job with him.
That's really funny. Oh, yeah, we're out of business now.
Oops.
Whoops. Well, how about network marketing? I know there's a wealth, and of course, there's some Ponzi schemes and stuff out there on that.
Exactly. In fact, I distinguish between Ponzi schemes, pyramid schemes, and legitimate network marketing companies.
Yeah.
Network marketing is also called the poor man's franchise because it is the least expensive to get into. So maybe a couple hundred, it's up to maybe $1,000. You know, as opposed to hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars for a franchise.
Yeah.
But it's going to take the same hard work. All you have to do is sell their product or services and recruit others to do the same. So one of my experts who was in network marketing created a network marketing company and now has created another company, so he's a serial entrepreneur. And what he said is if you have never run a business, that actually network marketing is a really good place to begin to decide if you are, first of all, if you're willing to learn what to do to create sales, to recruit other people to create sales, and then that you have the follow-through.
Yeah, I always, in my book, I tell people if they're considering franchising, rather than to associate strictly your future and everything with one franchise, you think Mary Jones Enterprises, with Mary Jones being yourself, and then you look at all the franchise opportunities out there, but you realize that you're not necessarily wedded to one, and if one fails, you can try other ones, but that you always keep your flexibility there in terms of a specific opportunity and never get too oversold by the presentation pitch that they always say, I'm doing great, and that stuff you go through.
Well, Roy, you've really nailed it, because part of my research around franchises found that the reason that most franchises fail is because, first of all, it's a really bad match to the person's skill and the work lifestyle that they want. And the other thing is that they didn't understand the contract that they were signing.
No. Yeah, I can't stand the way some of these multi-level or these network marketing programs talk about how easy it is. You know, you just get this huge downline and they do all their selling for you. And act like, obviously, if you don't approach it as a real business and put the time and effort in to build it up, it's not going to return you anything, because it just doesn't work that way.
In fact, all of the four Plan B businesses, you're going to work hard.
Yeah, that's what other people, I'm afraid a lot of people fail to realize. They have this dream of how great it's going to be when I'm CEO of XYZ company that I'm founding, but they aren't really prepared for all the many hours of hard work and all the tension and concerns in terms of building up that steady stream of income that they're going to have to go through to get from A to B.
You are exactly right. And again, that was part of the journey of writing the book, is because I had no clue what it took. And it was only through my own personal experience and really the ability to do the additional research, because I had the financial means to be able to support myself and the business, that I pulled this together so that it can really help people before they jump in, before they start writing checks and cashing out their 401k.
Yeah, I would so much urge anyone that's considering this to develop a 3-year, like you said, or whatever it is, an interim financial plan, because you really have to buy yourself what I call a lottery winner's mentality up front, so that you're not panicked every week and every month of how am I going to pay the bills this month, because that's going to really detract you from ever getting the business going. If you're always up against the wall, you're not going to do well at launching a business, I wouldn't think.
And absolutely, and that's that. Totally supports most businesses can be helped by increasing sales, and that's something you have to learn how to do.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we're just about out of time, but this is an excellent idea, and I love the sound of this book, and I guess it's going to be available in January, but people can sign up for it now, and please tell them how to do that.
Okay, absolutely. So let me give my website, try to make it as easy as possible. It's Plan B Coach, so just the letter B, planbcoach.com.
Oh, I see.
Okay, and actually, this has continued to morph until the book comes out. But what you're going to be able to do on the PlanBCoach.com website is that you can pre-order the book, and so you'll get a autographed copy as soon as it's available. And there's also a gift on the website. They can download the Real Deal Checklist on PlanBCoach.com. And what that will do is, again, that's the soft business plan that they can really think through an idea or concept they have, whether it's starting a business, buying a business, or buying a franchise, because we talk about trends and everything like that. And then what will happen in the future is that if they're interested, as I'm creating a newsletter, I'm also doing personal coaching. In fact, some of my examples of some of my clients are in the book about how we've helped them create their companies. And then I'm also creating a Plan B boot camp for those who really just want to go a little deeper, and that will be late spring in 2013.
And the sergeant will be there.
Excellent.
No, that you know, that is such a great idea. So many people, I've known some people in the past that develop these detailed fantasy financial projections of what their business is going to do over the next 5 or 10 years, but they haven't sat down and done that soft plan, like you say, in advance of what the concept's all about. Because anyone can write a bunch of numbers on paper, and I've developed some business plans that never came to fruition myself because I didn't do all that thinking in advance of exactly what I was selling and what the concept was all about. So I would highly recommend that they go to your website right now, and over the holidays, say near the end of the year, when they have some time away from work, well, not that they should ignore the family and Santa Claus, but you know, that would be a good time to start thinking about this soft aspects of your business, and then when your book comes out in January, they can get right to it.
Absolutely. And again, it helps them understand what lies ahead.
Yeah.
So that they're not caught by surprise.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. If you anticipate ahead of time what you're going to be doing, and you develop what I call this lottery winner's mentality, although I don't mean you should be naive like somebody that suddenly got a gift out of heaven, but you effectively build the confidence that you've planned out your immediate future and you know what you want to do and you have some backup plans in mind and all that kind of thing, then you're raring to go when you actually launch the project. And thank you so much, Kathleen, for being our guest today, because I think you've been really helpful to anyone that's considering being an entrepreneur in the new year or whenever.
Absolutely. It's a way they can get started. Thank you, Roy, for this opportunity.
And thanks so much. Well, in our 40s and 50s, most of us are not as trim, energetic, and healthy as we were in our early 20s and 30s. Do you believe that extra pounds, susceptibility to disease, and a significant decrease in energy are inevitable as you age? Well, our second guest today, Sam Rose, proclaims emphatically, that's rubbish. He points to the current expert consensus that our human bodies are genetically engineered to last up to 120 years. Why do so many of us wind up in the scrap pile, sputtering to a painful ending from heart attacks, strokes, cancer, diabetes, Alzheimer's disease, whatever, in our 50s, 60s, or 70s? The reason? Mostly a function of poor maintenance of our bodies, poor diet, too much stress, excessive alcohol, lack of exercise, and the often toxic environment of urban and suburban living. Our guest today, Sam Rose, is founder and head nutritionist of Rose Nutrition Center in West Los Angeles, California, and he's author of the book, The Way Back, Heal Yourself, Heal the World. Hello, Sam, and welcome.
Hello, Roy. It's great to be with you.
You know, you point out early in your book that when back in 1991, when you were a musician, songwriter, and somewhat out of shape in ideas, you saw an ad in a newspaper that said simply, are you ready? And that's what I'd like to ask our listeners today. Are you ready to wake up to life at middle age? Well, I know from personal experience it's difficult, if not impossible, to renew mentally, spiritually, and emotionally if you continue to reside in a sickly, worn-out, overweight, or stressed-out, low-energy body. Sam, tell us why our bodies become less able to tolerate stress and bad diet and lack of exercise as we grow older.
Well, you know, any living thing is going to be less tolerant of abuse as it ages. But the truth is that what's going on in this country is that diseases and neglect and poor self-care have been recast as medical conditions and addressed medically with drugs and surgery rather than through lifestyle and disease and dietary changes. So what happens is we get ourselves into a pickle by virtue of poor habits, and then rather than taking a look at the habits that got us into that condition in the first place, we go off to the medical community and they provide us with drugs or surgery that will temporarily mask the symptoms that we're feeling but do nothing to address the underlying causes. And so our body just finds new ways to get our attention. It'll find some other way to try to wake us up. And so we will find over time that one thing after another starts going wrong, as a function of the body's increased desire to wake us up to our condition. And if we never do make changes in our behavior, then we end up where most people end up, and that is 80% of us will die of a degenerative disease that we manufacture by virtue of poor diet and poor lifestyle. And we will die considerably younger than we would have to otherwise, and in much worse shape than we would if we were taking better care of ourselves.
Yeah, it's not just longevity, it's the quality of life.
That's right.
That matters too.
That's
about
right.
America's deadly diets of overprocessed and hormone-based, laced and chemically preserved foods and all that stuff we eat all the time.
Yeah. Well, here's the truth. The health of a country is generally measured in economic terms. When politicians are talking about the health of the United States, they're not talking about the physical health of the individuals. Yeah. They're talking about the economic strength of a country. And the economic strength of a country is built on the backs of consumers.
Yeah.
So 70% of our economy is based on consumerism. And consumers are encouraged to consume. And what we're encouraged to consume are products and foods that are cheap to manufacture and can be sold at a high profit. These are not healthy things for us.
I love the way you talk about somewhere in your book about how, you know, when we're teenagers, 20s and 30s, we're bombarded with ads for pizza and fast food, soda, beer as we get over the age of drinking. And then in our 40s, 50s, and 60s, if you watch the evening news or the programs that the older people are supposed to watch, you're bombarded with ads for expensive prescription drugs and Medicare supplement insurance, surgeries, and all these antidotes for what they've been forcing on us as youth.
Right. So you graduate through the system. I mean, you remain a consumer along the entire way. When you're young, they get you to consume this garbage food. And when you're older, you graduate to be a consumer of drugs and surgery. And, you graduate through the consumer system and just consume different things that are all designed to make somebody profit.
But
somewhere.
It's good for the economy, right?
Good for the economy.
Well, tell us, in the brief time we have, what can we do to counter these trends and to adopt a more healthy lifestyle so we don't get on this treadmill of...
Yeah, well, it really boils down to the individual just stepping back. You know, that question that in my book appears in sort of magically in a newspaper, are you ready? The question is, are you ready to take responsibility for yourself? Are you ready to get off that treadmill? Are you ready to step away from the line of lemmings jumping off that cliff?
Yeah.
And it really just comes down to people stepping back and asking themselves the question, you know, is my life style and what I'm doing going to lead me to a healthy future? And most people will, if they really ask themselves that question, would have to say that they could do a lot better.
Yeah, that ties in so closely to our overall theme on our program. And, of course, physical is one aspect of it. You have to ask yourself mentally if you're doing what you really want to be doing with the rest of your life and all those type of things. They all tie closely in together.
Yeah, and in my book, I tie, not only do I tie the Well, first of all, I should make it very clear, and I think you've mentioned this, but the book I wrote is a novel. It's a teaching novel. A lot of people's brains just shut down when they're bombarded by a lot of dry facts.
Yeah.
So I decided I was not going to just write a dry how-to book, and that the core lessons of self-care can be delivered. I believed that they could be delivered in an adventure story that kept people engaged long enough for those lessons to sink in.
Yeah.
And so the book delivers core self-care lessons, and they basically fall into five basic categories: what and how we eat as one category, the importance of detoxification, the importance of activity, and really activity over exercise. And there are all sorts of studies indicating that it's more important to be generally active than it is to be generally sedentary and then go exercise three times a week. Stress management, and the last being synchronizing our life pattern to the cycles of light and dark on the planet. We would need to talk. We would need more time to go into detail on all those.
Yeah.
But those are the core elements, and I do lay them out very, very simply through the story of the book.
Well, tell people how they can get your book, because that certainly sounds like something that ties right into our theme.
It's available in a few different places. It's available as an e-book everywhere e-books are sold. It's available in physical form through and as an e-book and at Amazon. And it's available on my website, which is rosenutrition.com. And if a person wants to get an autographed copy, they can order one through me directly. Otherwise, they can go to Amazon or any, if they're interested in an e-book, anywhere e-books are sold. And the full title is The Way Back, Heal Yourself, Heal the World.
Yeah, that sounds like a wonderful objective. And they can also, I noticed on your website, you also offer personal consultations both in person and over the phone.
Yes, I do. I counsel people everywhere in the United States. We use phone, email. You know, with today's technology, you can keep in touch with everybody. And I'm starting to think about offering workshops over the Internet as well.
Oh, that sounds like a great idea.
And if anybody wants to be in on that, they can get a hold of me through my website, and I will let them know when I'm offering workshops.
I appreciate it. And this is definitely something that we should all pay attention to, because physical ties in so closely in our nutrition with our overall objective of a joyful and purposeful second half of life. And thank you so much, Sam, for being our guest today.
Roy, I enjoyed being with you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.